Let's talk about a cookbook with a pretty controversial legacy, and it's a legacy that has come up to question in recent days. The book is called White Trash Cooking by Ernest Matthew Mickler, and it shook up the food world when it was released 30 years ago. The title enough offended some people, and the recipes included things like canned corned beef and potato chips. It offered a glimpse into what was served in some of the homes in the American South. White Trash Cooking became a bestseller, and it's considered a landmark work today. Still a fair share of critics, though. John T. Edge has written about the strange success of White Trash Cooking. He's the director of the Southern Foodways Alliance that's based at the University of Mississippi. Hi there, John.
Hello.
Also with us is food writer Sherry Castle. She joins us from Chapel Hill, North Carolina. Hi, Sherry.
Hello.
And here with us in Atlanta is food photographer Anzi Mosier. Very good to have you.
Thanks.
Okay, so let's start with the cookbook itself, since we're celebrating an anniversary, and whether or not, well, the first thing that offended a lot of people is just the use of the word white trash. Food writer Sherry Castle, would you use the term white trash in your food writing?
I would not, because I consider it derogatory and pejorative, and there are so many good adjectives. Why would I resort to that one?
What is an alternative adjective to that?
I think you'd call people impoverished or perhaps rural or resourceful or indentured. There are lots of things that can accurately describe someone's station without calling them disposable.
Kind of, I mean, it would be a weird title to call it indentured cooking, but I get your point. John, what do you think? I mean, it was the use of the term white trash that turned a lot of people off.
And that was purposeful on the part of Mickler. He had just graduated with a Master of Fine Arts from Mills College out in Berkeley. He was a son of small-town Florida. And this was an art project at its core. And much art is created to engender reaction. And that was exactly his intent. He used the term white trash to start a conversation. He used the term white trash to shock. He used the term white trash because he considered himself that. So I get Sherry's point. They're really good points, but they're points from the perspective of 2016. When this book came out, Mickler was trying to start a conversation about white working class culture, and he knew what term he was using. He used it purposefully and kind of playfully and subversively.
See, I'm not sure I agree with that. I mean, I never met the man, and I don't know if John T. did, but, you know, he did much of the work on this book, and to say he worked on it is really giving him more credit than I believe he deserves. He had people send in recipes. He had other people send in their work, and he had someone else type them up at a resort in Mexico. I'm not exactly sure that puts him in good stead as the voice of a working class. It seems awfully extractive to me.
So, Anzi, you remember this book when it was released? Yeah?
I do. Yeah.
Okay. Was it a topic of conversation among? Because you're true Southern. Is that accurate?
Yes. And it's safe to say that I come from a lot of white trash. So I actually didn't have a hard time with the title of it, and I still don't have a hard time with the title of it. I think, you know, while I would not scream to somebody's face that they're white trash, and I don't think about my cousins as white trash, but we call ourselves white trash. It's sort of a way to be a little bit self-deprecating and funny. And I agree that I think Ernest was an artist. I mean, he was a man of many talents. He was a writer. He took some really beautiful photographs that are in the book and document the way that rural poor people live. And so I feel like it's funny. Like, what are we going to call it? Are we going to call it Food Fair of the Impoverished South? You know, you can't do that. I mean, it's just a fun way, and it's a way to get people to buy the book.
Did you make recipes from the book?
I have made recipes from the book.
What? Give me an example of a recipe you like.
Well, some of them are very classic, and to give credit to Sherry, I mean, she and I both work on cookbooks, so we care mm-hmm. deeply about people getting credit for their work on cookbooks. But at the same time, we're all just learning from each other and taking away from each other. So, for example, some of the recipes are very classic and are eaten in white and black poor households. Things like buttermilk and cornbread, things like bologna sandwiches. One of my favorite, but at the same time, some of them are pretty complicated. There's one that I think is amazing called crepes a la Crayola Le Beau. And it's
Crayola like the crayon?
No, Crayola like Creole, like a mix. Okay. And so basically it's a mother sauce of mayonnaise, which is very French, and cream of mushroom soup, which is basically a bechamel with mushrooms in it, and then leftover collard greens rolled up in a flour tortilla.
Sherry, have you made some of the recipes in the book White Trash Cooking?
I have not, but I've read them. I've read them several times, and I don't have issue with the food. I think the food is interesting and fascinating. I think some things are in there for their shock value, and some things are in there because they are delicious and absolutely worthy of preservation and things we should be eating and would be lucky to eat. To me, it's not the inside. It's the wrapper it all came in. That's the part that prickles me.
So, John T., to some, I have read in defense of this book, White Trash Cooking, that it's an homage to the resourcefulness of people in the South and people who don't have the money to buy a filet. What's your response to that argument?
I mean, that's what the root of all Southern cooking is, whether it's black, white, or new immigrant cooking. It is resourcefulness, it's inventiveness, it's cultural adaptation. I think there are multiple ways to read this book, and I get Sherry's point completely. For me, it's the recipes as instructions for cooking are less interesting than it is to catalog these recipes, put them between the covers of a book, and then tell a story about them. And I think that's what Michler did. So it's less to me whether the recipes are successful, whether they are delicious. It was the act of collecting them that was fascinating. When the book was published, Harper Lee, whom we all know as the author of To Kill a Mockingbird, wrote, "I've never seen a sociological document of such beauty. We've long needed something other than the ballot box to remind us of their presence," meaning white trash folk. "White trash cooking is a beautiful testament to a stubborn people of proud and poignant heritage."
If you're just joining us, we're talking about the book, White Trash Cooking. It's the 30th anniversary, and one of the reasons we're talking about it is an argument that has come up recently among those who are poor and those who are not. My guests are Southern Foodways Alliance Director John T. Edge, food writer Sherry Castle, and food photographer Angie Mosier. So, Angie, you were saying that you wouldn't call other people necessarily white trash, but you called it among yourselves. And this calls to mind one of the reasons we're talking about this. And there has been a new trend among very expensive restaurants to serve very poor food. So let me give you an example. The Butter Bar in San Francisco, extremely expensive restaurant. I'm going to read you a description of it. The restaurant prides itself on being a true blue trailer park themed bar, serving up the best in trashy cuisine and cocktails with tater tots, microwave food, and deep fried Twinkies. The bar also serves cocktails that contain cheap ingredients such as Welch's grape soda, and the bar has an actual trailer inside and serves cans in paper bags. So there is this sort of hint of appropriation here, of people thinking it's trendy to pretend to put on the sort of accoutrements of being poor instead of honoring the resourcefulness of actually not having a lot of resources.
Yeah, I mean, I would like to know if, you know, the people that put that thing together were just a bunch of restaurateurs that were coming up with another concept that they thought might be popular, or if it was somebody that really does appreciate this kind of cooking. I feel it's funny because we all start getting a little bit possessive of the food of our people. And so it does kind of make me prickle a little bit to hear that there's somebody that's making fun of what we call trailer trash. But at the same time, maybe it's going to help us have a conversation over a table. I mean, I've had so many conversations in the last couple of weeks with folks saying, you know, how are we going to actually have a conversation with rural America? You know, I'm from rural America originally, or my roots are, but I grew up here in Atlanta. And so I think very differently than even some of my immediate family about, you know, where the country should head. So how am I, a city girl, going to be able to sit across from the country cousins that
Over Thanksgiving.
Yeah, it's a real thing that everyone's talking about now. So I feel like the great part about all of this is that food is the way that we can have a conversation, and you typically do keep your manners at the table. So hopefully there will be a lot of good conversations.
I don't know what family you're part of. We don't. Well, then let me put that to you, and let me start with you, Sherry, but John T., I'll give you a chance to respond as well. There is an argument over poverty, what people are calling poverty appropriation. What's your response to that as a food writer?
Well, I think that everyone deserves to have a story. Everyone does have a story. It's, again, I'm going to go back to the rapper. And I don't mean a rapper as in someone that is,
you know. W-R-A-P-P.
Exactly. The vessel in which it's done. Because the way something is presented has a lot to do with the message. And I think that's where the appropriation comes in. You know, that someone, I don't believe the people in that restaurant, although I've never been there, perhaps they're lovely people. I don't think they're trying to play tribute and give voice to people whose voices are always, you know, squelched and diminished and conscripted and so forth. I think that they think it's funny. I think it is like saying, I spent an afternoon in a petting zoo, I must be a farmer. I just find it disrespectful. And I think that their entitlement lets them think they can get away with it because there will be no repercussions for them. I don't think that anyone that's never felt a sting of class distinction can put themselves above it. I just find it rude.
So and then let me bring that to you, John T. I'm reading from the menu. You can buy SpaghettiOs, Beanie Weenies. That's on their microwave favorites menu. What do you make of that?
I mean, some of that's just a goof and nothing more. To the larger point, though, of appropriation, this is a conversation we're having across race and class now. And ultimately, if you boil it down, conversations about appropriation are about power, about who has the power to tell what story. It's not about voice. It's about power. Who's got the money to open a restaurant that is Butter Bar in San Francisco? Who's got the money? You know, if we're talking across race and class, we're talking about what African-American chefs in Atlanta and other places have the money to open their own restaurants with their own equity and tell their own stories. So, you know, this is a conversation that spans race and class, and it's about who has the power to tell the stories of their people. And it's time well spent thinking and talking about that. I don't think this book is the right place and time to talk about that in depth, because I think this is a man from this place he documents telling his own story in his own voice. It began in the mountains of North Carolina and in the small town of Florida. It is a story of place told by a person from that place. Butter Bar is something different. It is appropriation, and it is who has the power to tell a working class white story. Does that rest in the hands of people who are not white and working class? There's an issue.
So, Angie, let me read to you a tweet that we got that seems to be speaking to you. Joel Cook tweets this. Big picture here, this political correctness is a reason the Donald got elected. Hashtag white trash. Just say it. Have we learned nothing? It sounds like he's saying people should just use word white trash if that's what they mean. What's your response to that?
Well, I think, it's sort of the same idea of other groups of people being able to call each other a certain word and us not being able to call that person a certain word. I think that you have to be really careful how you use the word.
You mean whether you're insulting someone or not.
That's right. And also, it's funny because it's like those of us who are on the outside and are looking in on that world, it's like Sherry said, we don't know the sting of that, of having to live in a trailer with cars up on blocks or whatever in your front yard. But we also, for some reason, feel like a sense of pride in it. You know, there's a lot of us that try to out-poor each other or out country cook each other, out soul food each other. It's like that Key and Peele sketch where they're bragging about who can eat the nastiest plate of food, you know, that digs deep in the roots. So it's one thing. It's something that is a really hard conversation because some of us feel a little bit of pride in our white trash roots and some of us hate it.
Sherry, I feel like I want to put that to you. Neil Cassidy tweets, maybe it could be called cooking for the dollar challenge. But what do you make of Joel Cook's tweet that not using the term white trash is political correctness run amok?
I wouldn't call it political correctness. I would just say, you know, is the use of that term coming as an act of compassion and empathy and respect, or is it a way to make sure people know their place and are put in it? You know, words on a sheet of paper have no power. It's the way that we wield them. And I don't think you have to be a scholar of much of anything to know when someone is being mean or when someone is trying to desensitize and you know, take the power away from word by using it yourself. There's a difference in those things. And, you know, renaming the book may not change, it may not help, but I find the term rude, and I don't find it compassionate, and I don't think that's political correctness. It's just, as a person who has been, for my entire life, had people try to put me in my place by categorizing me that way, I'm just not going to give it a lot of latitude because I've had that used as a cudgel against me. Maybe people that have it find it more amusing than I do.
That is food writer Sherry Castle. We also spoke with Southern Foodways Alliance Director John T. Edge and food photographer Angie Mosier. Thank you so much to all three of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
You can actually check out a sample recipe from the book White Trash Cooking. It's at our Facebook page.